Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You might have heard, Alberta's economy, not doing so well.
The province's oil patch, already hit hard by thousands of job losses, is on track to lose thousands more.
You may also have heard from politicians that this is a very political issue.
The fight that we will engage in is not only about our way of life, our prosperity, our ability to pay our bills, fund our healthcare, build our schools, and pave our roads. It's also a moral cause for the world.
And finally, you might have heard a lot of anger, a lot of frustration from Albertans about the current state of things, from the economy to the oil sands to the politics around all of it.
Should Alberta ditch Canada? That question being raised again after it was plastered on billboards in Edmonton and in Calgary. Another sign that shows how frustrated Albertans are with Ottawa.
What you might not have heard a lot about, though, is the future of the oil sands and the future of Alberta's economy. And partly that's because the future is still in development. It's still in labs, and it's not going to happen overnight. But there is a future. And it even involves the very product the oil sands already produces. And if everything breaks right, there are a lot of ways that Alberta can still end up with a vibrant economy and hundreds of thousands of jobs in the oil sands. We just maybe don't know what they'll be making yet. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Chris Turner is an energy journalist. He is the author of The Patch, The People, Pipelines, and Politics of the Oil Sands. Hey, Chris.
Hi there.
Can you start by just explaining to those of us who are not versed in this, what is carbon fiber and what's it being used for?
Sure, yeah, and not surprising that there's not a lot of people being well-versed in it because it's not the most common thing in the world yet. Carbon fiber is a material made from byproducts of petroleum, sort of like the closest equivalent would be fiberglass, but it is much stronger and a much more transformative material, I guess you would say, than fiberglass. And it's primarily used in very, very high-end, like race cars and fairly expensive other expensive vehicles and that sort of thing, as a component that you know, adds a certain kind of strength and flexibility to a vehicle.
And why is it becoming kind of more of a focus now? What's shifting?
Well, I mean, I think the potential. I don't know that there's been a shift yet, so much as that there's a bit of attention to the potential,
right,
for it to have a much wider use. And where that comes from, one direction that comes from, is the fact that carbon fibers are a good deal more lightweight than steel and aluminum and other materials that are traditionally used in vehicles. And for electric vehicles in particular, weight is much more important than it is with an internal combustion engine because the less weight you have in the vehicle, the fewer batteries you need. And the batteries are the most expensive component of an electric car. So the thought is, and some of the first kind of semi-commercial applications of carbon fiber beyond these kind of concept cars and professional race cars and that kind of thing has been in limited run, you know, BMW electric cars and things like that. So the thought is that the value that this carbon fiber adds in terms of weight and durability and strength is uniquely suited to electric cars. And so if we're going to be seeing, you know, millions and millions of electric cars rolling out in ever greater numbers in the coming decades, that might create a much larger role for carbon fiber in the auto industry.
And explain why that potential matters to Alberta and the oil sands.
Right. So Alberta has been looking at, in various programs, looking at potential for uses of bitumen, the product of the oil sands, other than turning it into a heavy fuel. And the reason for this being that turning it into a, or you're turning that into a heavy fuel, and then potentially even into a crude oil, as is sometimes done with synthetic crude. These are pretty energy intensive and costly ways to meet a market that has a bunch of other sources. So, starting the last couple of years, there was a program that got put together through Alberta Innovates, which is Alberta's provincial research council, to look at what would potential future uses of bitumen be. Where would might there be other markets for it that aren't just turning it into a fuel and combusting it? And one of the things that process revealed was that it's actually quite well suited to carbon fiber. And reason for this is actually unique to bitumen. To turn it into a fuel oil, you have to crack any crude oil to refine it into a fuel. But particularly with bitumen, it creates a larger amount of the raw feed material for a particular carbon fiber production process, these things called asphaltenes. And so it would actually, whereas currently it has sort of a market disadvantage against conventional crude oil, it might have a market advantage against other petroleum sources in producing this raw feedstock for carbon fiber.
When you look at kind of the scope of the oil sands, and I guess the oil and gas economy in Alberta, and we were just talking about the potential of carbon fiber, how far apart are the two right now? Like what are we talking about, you know, in terms of, oh, if demand picks up, this could be a theoretical replacement, or is this like a very small component of what's needed?
It's a small component. It's one of the bigger small components. Let's put it that way. So I'm trying to remember the exact number. Something like maybe as high as 20% or so of a given of a barrel of bitumen could potentially be used to produce stuff like this carbon fiber. So you're not nothing, but not the majority of the fuel either, nor the majority of the raw material either. So it's very much considered, you know, kind of a one of many things that is worth looking into, but maybe one of the ones that has the biggest potential. And the time frame on this is still pretty long. It's still, you know, the just, you know, sort of refining the process by which you would take these asphaltenes that are produced in the bitumen production process and turn them into carbon fiber. That's still at lab scale. So, you know, the where that stands right now is the folks who are doing the sort of lab testing are beginning to go to other places where carbon fiber production is being experimented with to compare methods, beginning to talk to some producers about potential, you know, sort of next stage pilot project kind of stuff. But this is 5-10 years off before you would even potentially have a commercial scale application of this, and then it would have to make market sense that you would need for the, you know, like one of the things that's happening with electric cars is as the batteries become cheaper, which is happening, the demand for or the impetus to reduce the weight of the vehicle is not quite as intense as it might have been a couple of years ago. So all of this is very much in the, you know, high risk but potentially high reward kind of area of R&D. So this is not these trajectories aren't guaranteed. The technology looks like it, I mean there's no big question marks there in terms of making it happen. There's no big question mark in terms of, you know, having the feedstock if the market's there. It's, you know, does the process make economic sense? One of the things that's hoped is that producing the carbon fiber from bitumen might be significantly cheaper than current production methods, enough so that it makes that new carbon fiber much more competitive, cost competitive than the current products, which are quite expensive for the amount of volume.
Well, one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you about this to begin with is because I thought it would be a good way for us out in Ontario to get a sense of what kinds of innovation the people actually in control of Alberta and the oil sands are looking for and how they're grappling with trying to find a new source of income, essentially.
Right. Well, that moves actually past new sources of income. I think one of the things that's not necessarily clear, because the discussion about oil sands and pipelines in Canada has become so, you know, deeply controversial and aggressive, and mm-hmm. you know, these dividing pro and con camps, is that in the middle of that is just this industry, you know, with a lot of money and a lot of jobs behind it, and the rest of it producing 3 million barrels of oil a day, and at the kind of, you know, senior decision-making level, these are companies and people who understand that the market around them is changing rapidly and are aware that it is going to be increasingly competitive to get, you know, to get a market for their product on all fronts. And so what I think the interesting thing about this carbon fiber project is I think reveals a little bit of just how thoroughly the industry is thinking through what is it that we make and how are we going to sell it. And this does not just include, you know, what is the final output. One of the things that, you know, when you talk to folks in the oil sands industry, kind of frustrates them a little bit in the midst of all of this heated debate, is that they've been spending the last, you know, 10 years or more just, you know, trying to get more efficient, trying to reduce emissions on all fronts, working with new technologies that might allow them to significantly reduce the amount of energy that's required to produce the bitumen in the first place. So while, yes, they are aware that there's, you know, this controversy around pipelines, this question of how big the carbon footprint is, they are also, you know, actively and very seriously looking at how do we begin to address some of those concerns, how do we find other ways to market that won't create, you know, this amount of friction and this amount of pushback. And I think this is, you know, this is the Bitumen Beyond Combustion program, which produced this carbon fiber project, is just one little sliver of that. There's tons of that kind of investment and innovation going on, really on all fronts.
Well, yeah, tell me about Alberta Innovate specifically, because you touched on it briefly and how it factors in here and what other stuff they're looking at.
Yeah. Actually, comprehensively, what they're working on. What I can tell you is, Alberta Innovates was the Alberta Research Council, so kind of provincial equivalent of the National Research Council. It's been around since, you know, the early days of the province, founded sometime around the end of World War I, I think, and has been involved. The Alberta Research Council has been part of the oil sands since those early days. It was, you know, an early funder of some of the first work that led to, you know, figuring out a production process to turn bitumen into separate bitumen so that it could be turned into oil in the first place. One of the big things that's pointed to here in Alberta as an example of the kind of stuff that they want to be, you know, they want to be funding now, is that the Alberta Research Council was central in the Lougheed days in the 70s in helping to set up this organization called AOSTRA, which AOSTRA was basically a targeted piece of R&D, provincially funded R&D, federally as well, actually, but mainly provincial, to figure out ways other than, you know, huge mines to get bitumen out of the ground. And actually, the majority of oil sands production now comes from in situ projects, as they're called. And what basically this is, using steam to kind of liquefy and then push the bitumen out of the deposit. And that technology was entirely developed by this AOSTRA investment that started in the 1970s. So they've seen, you know, these major breakthroughs that completely changed the industry and now are looking for sort of a new round. At the same time they're doing that, actually, they have a new provincial government that just significantly reduced their funding. So it's kind of, they're kind of in a bit of a limbo now. I would think that the work they're doing on emissions reduction and new technological development in the oil sands will continue. That would be seen as pretty core to what they want to do. There's also alongside that an organization called COSIA, the Canadian Oil Sands Innovation Alliance, which specifically, that's industry-backed, and that's the various companies in the oil sands trade mainly environmental and emissions reduction technology knowledge and work together on projects to try and shrink the carbon footprint and make the whole process more efficient and make, you know, remediation of the site after it's been, all the bitumen's been extracted, you know, the cleaning up tailings ponds, remediating soils, all that kind of stuff. It's basically an attempt to kind of pool that information rather than reinventing the wheel at each site.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
This question I honestly have no idea of the answer to, but because you touched on earlier that this is an issue, especially the pipelines and the oil sands, that it becoming increasingly partisan on both sides. And how does the industry, and I guess specifically things like Alberta Innovates, grapple with the fact, like, we've all seen the I Love Canadian Oil and Gas signs at every rally, and is looking for alternatives going to start to be seen as being anti the current industry? Does that make sense?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, like if you are looking for ways to reduce the emissions or find non-fuel products for bitumen, are you not inherently kind of buying into one argument or the other?
Yeah.
That's not what the internal conversation looks like. And the internal conversation is much less... I mean, I think you wouldn't want to over... You know, the industry is not monolithic. It doesn't all speak as one.
Yes.
But the oil sales particularly has always been... I shouldn't say always. Has certainly for... coming up on a decade now, been more so than most of the rest of the oil and gas sector in Alberta, willing to work with environmental and emissions technology and you know, for example, oil sands companies, Suncor in particular, the largest of them, Cenovus, a number of the other big ones, have endorsed, you know, carbon pricing, have said that, you know, we can operate in a jurisdiction that has a robust and increasing carbon price. We are not worried about any of these sort of things. Our big question is market access, and certainly they were wholly in favor of the idea that you know, much more aggressive action on climate change as a way to assuage sufficient concerns that a pipeline project or two would get approved. They saw that as an excellent and worthwhile trade-off. So they are not internally, as companies, are not actively trying to weaken climate legislation or
right.
You know, participate in these you know the much more heated debate that's going on here in Alberta right now. I think where you hear that from is, you know, the sort of wider, you know, all the many kind of affiliate and service companies, not just for the oil sands but the whole oil and gas sector, who have seen, you know, really dramatic change in their fortunes over the last few years and feel very much like they're being pinched out of the Canadian economy by this you know, more aggressive climate legislation. Within the oil sense, this is not a controversial thing to say. Hey, we would like to reduce our emissions. We would like to find, you know, other markets and other ways to, you know, turn our product into something that we can sell at a premium. So, but they do that in the midst of what they recognize is this incredibly heated debate. And I think probably, if anything, if there was a, you know, really common mood among the oil sands companies, it would be that they feel very much like the heated partisan debate around oil sands and pipelines and emissions has kind of, you know, meant that their voice has sort of vanished from it, that they're, you know, they stand somewhere in the middle of all of that, completely overwhelmed by the fact that it's, you know, either for or against. And
right. And well, they're just trying to diversify their profit streams, really.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, and secure, you know, that they know, I mean, if you've built an oil sands operation in the last 10, 15 years, and lots of companies, that, I mean, that's when most of the production came online, you built that with an expectation of about, you know, 20 or 30 years or more of production. And so you're looking at, we need to, you know, we need to find, you know, a stable way to get our product to whatever markets for that time in order to, you know, to earn back what we invested in this.
How much do you think, because we understand almost none of it out here, or at least didn't know about it, but how much do you think the average Albertan understands some of the innovation going on in the sector and the fact that these companies are already sort of planning to eventually move on?
I mean, maybe a little more in that, you know, a lot of people, you know, the industry is a large enough, you know, entity that, you know, Albertans maybe a little bit more than the rest of Canada are aware it's not a monolithic industry. There's a difference between the attitudes of, you know, folks who work in the oil sands versus folks who work in conventional oil and gas, and, you know, the large companies versus the small and medium companies, and on and on and on. And so might, you know, and there's enough kind of talk about what's happening with the industry here that you might be aware, oh yeah, they've been investing in, you know, cleaner technologies, in emissions reduction, in smaller environmental footprint. I think there's a, that piece of it at least would be a thing. I mean, I think outside of Alberta, all you hear is, you know, the anger and the resistance to change and that sort of thing. And that's not really what the internal conversation looks like. The finer points of it, I mean, I don't think, you know, the one of the difficult things about the industry, and this is not just the oil sands, is it tends to be pretty quiet about R&D. It tends to be very, very cautious mm-hmm. about saying anything in particular about anything. Something like this, you know, story I did on carbon fiber, which is a broadly positive story, was not something that most oil companies wanted to comment on because they look at that and think, we're not going to say anything you know, definitive about an unproven
technology.
But it's
a good news story for them, really.
Yeah, it's an industry that's always been kind of wary of media attention, and particularly in this province, feels like most of the media attention it gets doesn't work out very well for it. So, they tend to be extremely cautious about saying it, and certainly didn't want to be seen as saying, hey, we think this is the future, because we are looking at, you know, a dozen possible futures all the time and don't want to, you know, put too much emphasis on any particular one of those.
Well, that's fair, but then I guess... Probably my last question is, in terms of your gut feeling, or even just like what the executives will tell you when you're not writing a story, how different does this industry look 5 years from now? And if it's not carbon fiber, is it something else? Or is it still primarily oil and pipelines and the other stuff supplementing it? Like, how quickly does this have to change?
It'll be more than 5 years.
Right.
Would be my sense. I mean, I think the when you look at some of the technological stuff, I think you start to see emissions reduction technology. I mean, some of them already, there are already, you know, commercial scale operations, the in situ operations that make steam to get the oil out of the ground instead of mining operations. A number of those are looking at, because the steam is mainly produced from natural gas, and so a big chunk of why the oil sands oil barrel is more emissions intensive than a conventional oil barrel is that all of that natural gas that they use. There are solvent technologies that do not require creating steam, which therefore doesn't require, you know, all this natural gas. Stuff like that is already, you know, operating at test scale on a number of sites. Stuff like that you might see in 5 years. Something like, you know, shifting to, you know, carbon fiber production over, you know, various other things that are currently being produced, or that, you know, some of those things are just waste streams at the moment. And certainly that's a whole separate thing, that, you know, the idea of turning carbon dioxide from a waste stream into a production stream is a thing that they're also looking at. That stuff, I think, is more in the, you know, it's tough to speculate, but probably at least 10 years out. So you'll see, you know, the on-site efficiency and emissions reduction stuff way before you'll see, I think, hey, we don't even make fuel anymore. I think, you know, regardless of how successful something like this carbon fiber project would be, you're still looking at fuel being a significant part of what they produce for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Interesting. Thanks for taking the time for us, Chris.
My pleasure.
Chris Turner, energy journalist, author of The Patch. And that was The Big Story. If you'd like more, you know by now, they're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. And we are, as always, on Twitter, waiting to hear from you at TheBigStoryFPN. And we're in all your podcast applications, especially the ones where you can rate us, especially if you like us and want to help out with that. We would appreciate it. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. And I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Have a great weekend. We'll talk Monday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.